Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everybody. My name is Geert, and this, once again, is NBN's Drugs, Addiction, and Recovery podcast. I'm excited to be joined today from Medellin, Colombia, by Dr. Javier Guerrero. Hi, Javier. Thanks so much for coming.
Hi, Geert. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Javier published his research in 2020 with Palgrave Macmillan under the title Narco Submarines: Outlaw Innovation and Maritime Interdiction in the War on Drugs. And it's studying criminal technology within its social ecosystem. Now, although the topic of your book perhaps is somewhat extravagant in a first view, you show in an excellent way, I think, that the existence of narco submarines is only a symptom of the way the interaction between law enforcement and criminal organizations works. Javier, before we get to the content of the book, could you maybe tell us a bit more about yourself professionally and what brought you to studying this interplay between crime, law enforcement, and technological innovation?
Well, I am a sociologist, basically, and then I moved to do some science and technology studies. I went to Edinburgh and to do my master's and then my PhD. I went there with a fairly good idea of what I wanted to do, to understand at that moment. A little bit innocent, I remember. But the way I started thinking about this, actually, I was working on trying to understand innovation in general in Colombia. Like, I was trying to understand how the system of innovation in Colombia works. And at that moment, I remember it was like by the end of the last decade. And then I keep seeing this news about the narco subs that they found in the Pacific or in the Caribbean. And I keep hearing about this. And then was thinking like, okay, the way I was thinking, like, we are not a really innovative country, but then you find and in this area there are some people doing some things that at the moment seem to be pretty sophisticated. Then I find out, well, they are not like that sophisticated. But anyway, the idea of a submarine to transport drug at that moment was like really interesting. And then I just asked myself and my colleagues, how do they build this stuff? When, where, why, who build this stuff? So I started like trying to understand as much as I can the phenomenon of drug dealing using narcosubs and other technologies. So basically I started from there. Started from moving from the kind of legal innovation, and then I moved completely to illegal kind of innovations.
Yeah, I see. And when I was reading your book, I found that fascinating indeed. There was these innovation processes going on by principally you're focusing on these private users or private groups, and also the law enforcement innovation. And you did different kinds of field work to understand more about this. Could you tell us a bit more about what you did in terms of empirical research?
I started basically trying to read everything that was published about narcosops, and I found out that there wasn't really that much, in the sense of all technologies regarding drugs modeling. Like at that moment, it has changed a little bit, but technologies in drug trafficking tends to be fairly in the background, like something that you use to transport drugs, but not really like an important topic of research. And that comes when people is transporting drugs, moving drugs using airplanes or the so-called mules, all kind of transport. So there wasn't a lot of information about it. Like, and that was also like really interesting for me at that moment, because it was a topic that wasn't the news, international news, local news, regional news, but there wasn't like a really people trying to understand what was happening with the phenomenon of drugs modeling regarding technology. So I began like trying to knock on doors of people. I perceive at that moment, yeah, they might have some knowledge about this. So I went to the Colombian police, especially to the anti-narcotic police. And then I went to the Navy and I went to the Justice Ministry at the moment to try to talk to people. And also I tried to, at that moment, try to talk with drugs modelers. Like I tried to find out my way to talk with drugs modelers. I started like trying to find my way inside jails in Colombia. That was like a catch 22 kind of situation, so I couldn't talk to them, but I was able finally to talk with some retired drugs modelers in the north of Colombia, in the region known as La Guajira. So I managed like moving some contacts. Like I start like asking to everybody, do you might know someone who is in the drug business? and you know, like if the law of Milgram's kind of stuff, the small worlds. So yeah, I finally managed to find a cousin of mine who knew some people who might be involved in the drugs business. And he actually introduced me to some people, and those people introduced me to some others that were actually like in the drug business or were during the 90s and the last decade. So then because I also wanted to like to see both sides of the binary, as I call it in my book. I wanted to see obviously how drugs modelers produce their ideas, produce their innovations. And initially, I have to be honest, I wanted to go to the police and to the Navy just to try to find some information on how drugs modelers do their stuff. But I find out that actually the police and the Navy are also, that is not so surprising when I say it right now, but I find out that they actually obviously do a lot of stuff. Like in the daily job, they do a lot of stuff regarding innovation in the war on drugs. So yeah, I started like, I'm going to use police and Navy as secondary sources to find out how drugs modelers do their stuff. And I found myself actually doing 1 year and a half of field work with the Colombian police and the Colombian Navy, because I find it was really interesting how they do and how they think and how they move the knowledge that they have regarding how and also that possibility gave me like to understand the phenomena of innovations, as you mentioned users, and I thought, well, okay, drugs modelers are the users, they produce their technology, but they do not produce their technology in an empty ecology. They produce the technologies because there's something going on. And what is going on is not just the war on drugs, but also like the day-to-day work that the police and the Navy do. So that's what I do. So then I spend some time on the Pacific region of Colombia, on some Navy stations in Colombia. I went a little bit down south of the Pacific to Tumaco to interview people on the field, like they have been involved in capturing narco ops in open sea or just in the shore. I went to Santa Marta and Cartagena also to interview people from the Navy, and I went to the north of the of Colombia, to La Guajira, to interview some retired drop smugglers.
Fascinating. I presume that that must have given you a few interesting stories. I also find it very. I didn't know that you started out not wanting to specifically research these law enforcement actors, but in the end, ending up studying both sides of the equation, so to say. Well, related to that, I guess a key point in your book is that you are sort of skeptical about this this popular image or this image in the media that criminals in a technological way are always a step ahead of law enforcement. I do relate this. I do recognize this image, for instance, when thinking about technologies like encrypted communication tools or something. The criminals are always portrayed as really having this advantage, this step ahead. But you say that it's not this eternal game of catching up that law enforcement is undertaking. You instead speak of a kind of a symbiotic relationship in this innovation. Could you maybe tell the listeners what exactly brought you to this conclusion?
Yeah, I think it was the possibility of doing empirical work with drug smugglers and a lot of empirical work with the Navy and the police, like trying to see how actually they do that. And some of the which was really interesting is that some of the linear kind of evolutionary innovation in drug smuggling technology or narcosoft technology is quite not right, because it's when the media and obviously also like in official documents, they tend to portray like drug smuggling moving from one point to another, and it's like a constant process of innovation. But when I went to the field and started like looking at probably 100 exemplaries of narcosops, what I actually saw was like, okay, there's no like an evolutionary. It's not like to say that the one narcosop captured this year is better than the one that was captured last year, because there's what you can see there is actually like a different kind of overlaps in the kind of things that they use to produce their technology. Like that was like the first insight. So in the side of the drug smugglers, what is happening is actually not a constant development of a particular technology. There is nothing here to say that, rather than the media kind of frenzy around technology, and rather obviously than the kind of political interest in the side of the army and the police to portray their enemies as people who is constantly innovating. So that was like the kind of first insight. And the second insight was obviously the result of working with the Navy and the police. Like looking, for example, sometimes the police demonstrated and the Navy demonstrated that they were actually the people who were ahead of drug smugglers, and actually drug smugglers have to somehow reply to the sort of to the innovation they perceive the police and the Navy were doing. So what was actually happening was a combination of different types and different ways of doing things in both sides. And seeing that from a symmetric perspective, from the perspective of science and technology studies provides, I could actually see that what was happening was not this constant catch up, arms race, balloon effect, the kind of metaphors that are used to talk about the different kind of movements in the war on drugs. So,
Okay. I understand, but so there's no linear or no constant process of innovation, but you still do speak of some kind of innovation. So, in the book you speak about pretty much 20 years or so of development with these narco submarines, 25 years. What developments did you see on the criminal side and perhaps on the law enforcement side?
Yeah, what was interesting was probably to see how the different developments move through time, because they actually, yeah, they do move through times, but obviously also has a lot to do with the development of technologies outside the ecology of the war on drugs, the socio-technical systems that are in place there. For example, obviously the introduction of the GPS, it's like a really interesting thing. So people started using the GPS. Both drug smugglers and the Colombian Navy started using GPS systems. So that was one of the things. But mostly what you can see is during those 20, 25 years that I studied, are some things that kept constant. And some things change, but they do not change definitely. They can actually just disappear in any moment. And the thing that you saw in the past, like the narcosub that you saw running in 1997, might appear again in 2015. Mm-hmm. So, because obviously there's like this idea, when you see it from outside, there's going to be a better technology, a new technology, and the Navy is going to probably react at this point using the same kind of understanding of the development of technology that the drug smugglers are going to use better technology. But sometimes the better technology is not the new technology in the war on drugs. Sometimes the better technology is actually the old technology. If you use a narcosub built on wood, only it will be more difficult for the radars and sonars to actually detect any trace of that narcosub. So that's why you can see that the narcosub that was found in 1997, the model of building that narcosub, the kind of materials that they use can be found again some years later. Even if some years later, also you can find some like really sophisticated narcosub building Kevlar, using like the latest GPS technology. So you can find actually it's just a mixture of the different technologies there.
That's cool. That's quite the observation. And do you think, because, well, there are some instances of captured narco submarines in Europe. I heard some stories around Spain, I guess in other places around the world as well. And in my opinion, it seems like a very useful way to stealthily smuggle all these different illegal goods. I mean, it's smart. It's small, and it's, the sea is large. But your book, well, as far as I could see, made it as quite a specific Colombian or perhaps Caribbean or Pacific phenomenon, because dozens or maybe hundreds have been captured during the last decades. Why is this so so Colombia specific?
Well, when I was researching for my book, I was actually just trying. Well, I was trying to finish a PhD first of all, and when I was doing this, actually the phenomenon was mostly Colombian, or at least the one that were captured. There were some odd examples, like probably one in Spain and one in Ecuador, but there was a Colombian bill. You can see that in the kind of model that they captured. So mostly Colombians were involved in developing, building, and using narcosubs. The other thing that I say in the book, which is basically just a kind of observation, and as you said, the idea of the narcosub is pretty much interesting because it's small. Actually, it's slow, and the slowness is useful when you try to smuggle drugs in the sea, because it doesn't leave any kind of wake as the go-fast boats do. So it's more difficult to capture from air. And Colombians came from a trend of actually using the maritime routes since the early 90s to transport drugs. So what I also say there, like, is precisely this moment in which the maritime interdiction began to be seen as the focus of the action when the narcosubs appear. And the narcosubs appear as a kind of fairly good solution to the idea of transporting drugs in the sea. They began to compete with go-fast boats, and they began to compete with cargo containers as the main method of transporting drugs using maritime routes. And obviously, unfortunately, at that moment, and it hasn't changed a lot, Colombia was producing a very important percentage of cocaine that was being transported. And obviously, the whole situation with different groups trying to get an advantage of the money involved in transporting drugs also made the solution kind of a really good solution.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I found that that a great focus of yours. It's great that you mentioned that it's not just about competition or evolution, co-evolution between law enforcement and drug trafficking organizations groups, but also between these drug trafficking organizations. How did you get to this realization? Was that through the interviews or differently?
I am probably also like really interesting in terms of trying to developing a new understanding of how criminal organizations, whatever you want to call it, works. Because in the beginning, I was fairly influenced by the whole idea of the cartels. You know, we have this idea of the cartels coming from a long time ago, and then we have this huge figure of the Medellin cartel and the Cali cartel and the whole mythology around Pablo Escobar. So when I was growing up, I was seeing this kind of understanding of drug trafficking, and obviously the law enforcement and the Navy and the Army, the whole government, they want to understand, and they want to portray, and they tend to portray drug organizations as organized in these big cartels. And then the whole theory says, okay, when they killed Pablo Escobar in 1993, and then when they jailed the bosses of Cali cartel, then what began to appear was a lot of baby cartels. And baby cartels is a fairly silly way to name something. Because
the cartelitos.
Yeah, the cartelitos. The very same definition of a cartel is that it's big and that it's powerful and that it can control production, distribution, selling, security, and so on, so on. So if you say something is a baby cartel, actually you're not saying anything. and then you can see that a different, like a theoretical approach appear in the space. And then we stopped talking about baby cartels and cartelitos, and we began talking about networks. But networks is also a little bit complicated way to understand drug smuggling. And especially since most of the theoretical approximations to network analysis, especially in criminality, implies some sort of rational decision making for those involved in the networks. So networks is not a way to understand the technologies or the organizations, but networks are a way in which the people involved in drug trafficking are organized. That's obviously according to the main theoretical approaches. And I found that a little bit difficult to understand when or to try to grasp when I went to do some fieldwork. First of all, because when I went to the Pacific and to the Caribbean, what you can find is like very different approaches to the same design, the design of narcosops. So I began asking myself how it is possible if you have this kind of networks, rational networks, or whatever you want to call them, producing so many different designs with that kind of variation that will imply some sort of coordination, probably will imply some sort of things that I wasn't seeing on the field, that people were not telling to me, like how do they build this stuff? So I started to doubt on those approximations.
Yeah, that's interesting. That would also be a question of mine, because you say that there are many benefits to this this network approach when it comes to criminal organizations or crime. What would you say? Because I understand your critique. What would you say that are other helpful models when it comes to drug-related networks, apart from the, of course, the classical hierarchical pyramid, such as the cartels, and beyond the network analysis?
I think we have to continue understanding or trying to understand networks, but not in a way in which are currently understood, not in a way in which some people decide to organize themselves as networks. Not in a way in which some nodes in the networks have this kind of power decision making in which are currently portrayed, and you know how then the theories of interdiction then approach this, and that if you capture this particular node, then the network is going to disappear. And I will say that you have to understand that a network doesn't work in an empty situation. Networks are connected to different sites. So a particular criminal network is not alone there doing their stuff apart from the rest of society. Actually, they have connections with banking, finance, commerce. And also, it is important to, and I think it's one of the main arguments of my book, to understand the role of technology in the whole building of the criminal networks. Because technology have been left aside of this understanding, and I think they play a crucial role. I tend to think that without the development of these kind of technologies, probably the networks, well, they obviously have to find another shape to perform their actions, but we would have a pretty different outcome of the war on drugs, at least in the last 20, 15 years.
Yeah, makes sense. Definitely makes sense. Thanks for the also the theoretical elaborations. That's always the hard part when it's about these concrete empirical phenomena. Before we end the interview, is there any conclusion from the book perhaps that we have missed so far, or perhaps a juicy anecdote that you can share?
I think there are a lot of anecdotes when it comes from this and from field work, but I always like to talk about like how the actually the people from the Navy do their work and how they also are able to develop their own technologies. For example, I talk about the whole go fast boats that the Navy uses and how they transform the boats to try to catch the drug smugglers, even if their superiors are not allowed they do not know, the superiors do not know what the people in the field are doing. And sometimes that get actually reprehended for changing the boats without asking their superiors. Also, I might say that this try to when we are understanding the technologies, and this is something that I saw you kind of mentioned it at some point, at what we actually see are the narcosubs that have been captured, like that those are the kind of artifacts that we actually see that I talk about in the book, but there are probably some others out there that are so good that we do not see it. We do not find them like in the news. We probably the Navy does not know a lot about them. That's a risk when talking about this kind of technology that are in the dark, that are in the gray zones, that you are only talking about the kind of specimens, the artifacts that have been captured. That is something to take into consideration.
Yeah, that's always the hard part for social scientists studying criminality. There's especially when you depend on police statistics or other observations, it's always going to be only an approximation of the actual situation. Thanks for sharing. And we didn't speak much about that part, but the organization of these law enforcement or law enforcement agencies, you suggest that there's a lot of innovation going on the operational levels, and that the strategical levels know much less about. That's indeed interesting. We spoke a little bit before the interview, and you told me that actually, after completing the study, you sort of moved on beyond narco subs. Could you share with us what you are working on right now?
Well, I'm working with a colleague in the University of Edinburgh and trying to develop a new understanding of the kind of on the whole theoretical approximation on the technological technology in the war on drugs. We are working specifically trying to understand the infrastructure and how the whole infrastructure of drug smuggling is possible, and how this infrastructure is embedded in the bigger infrastructure of global commerce. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to understand the role of airports in the drugs modeling process. There have been actually a lot of academic studies on airports, especially in drugs modeling in Europe, but we are not trying to understand like a specific technologies. We're trying to understand the more theoretical approximation on how these infrastructures are embedded and how do they work and how do they manage to appear, disappear, and so on.
That's great. It's good to hear that there's so much depth behind these sensational phenomena. So thanks for sharing that, and it gives us something to look forward to. Javier, thanks so much for your time. And once again, Narco Submarines, Outlaw Innovation and Maritime Interdiction in the War on Drugs was the study. And we're looking forward to future projects. Speak to you next time, Javier. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Javier. Bye-bye.